it has got to do something with spirituality or something intuitively would happen for them. But I guess that's the reason.
And by the way, sometimes it's just a moment of manifestation for the right person that happens, and they can see the curtains would fall, and they would see the truth the way it is, with the entire purity and tranquility that it owns. And that's why they are attracted to it. So this was actually very interesting of a topic, because there are many accounts, many documentaries out there for you to go and watch and, of course, read and see how many influential people have changed their religion and have joined Islam for the different reasons, actually. Everybody sees something different in it, and then they would change it all. So thank you for staying with us. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah, Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabb. Let the Ummah rise again.
Ya Allah,
Ya Rabb al-Alamin, Ya Rahman, Ya Rahim, Ya Rabbi, let the Ummah rise again. Let us see daylight again, once again.
In the limelight.
Taking officials with military and intelligence experience out of decision-making positions while arming Netanyahu with even more intelligence information access could easily lead to the weakening of the Zionist regime's strategic decision-making. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Palestine Chronicle wrote, "What could be more problematic for the Zionist regime government, however, is the potential negative outcomes of Benjamin Netanyahu having a free hand in his decision-making power and interpretation of intelligence information. The Zionist regime ministerial committee on legislation is slated to form a new intelligence division that would report directly to the Zionist regime's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to provide alternative information aiding any security-relating decisions. This comes as the Zionist regime premier takes near dictator levels of power. A bill proposed by Likud Party member of Knesset, Amit Halevi, would create what is being dubbed the Ifeha Misbra, Devil's Advocate Intelligence Unit. This intelligence unit would report directly to PM Benjamin Netanyahu and have the powers granted to it, which allows for direct requests to be made to Israeli intelligence services that they provide information. If the legislation is indeed passed following the discussion with the ministerial committee, leaders in Israel and security cabinet would then have to consult with this devil's advocate body and ask to provide alternative intelligence assessments. No decisions would be made without such consultations." Why this is important is it signals the Zionist regime prime minister is closing on seizing an enormous amount of decision-making power. If we simply look at what has been happening throughout the war, Child killer Benjamin Netanyahu has been faced with significant pushback against various strategies and pushed to investigate the intelligence failure that brought about the lack of readiness to deal with October 7 Al-Aqsa storm operation last year. At every turn, Netanyahu is choosing to avoid accountability for the most significant security breach in Israeli regime society, while he also lives with the fear in the back of his mind that an end to the war could mean he sees the inside of a jail cell as a result of his ongoing corruption trial. Immediately after the beginning of the genocide in Gaza, the Zionist regime formed a unity government's war cabinet, which included opposition figures Benny Gantz and Gadi Eisenkot. Gantz and Eisenkot were not always political opponents of Benjamin Netanyahu. In fact, both of them had been in senior military positions under the rule of the Zionist regime prime minister. Eisenkot was the former Israeli chief of staff for the military, while Benny Gantz had been the war minister under Netanyahu, in addition to holding other senior military positions in the past. In June, Eisenkot and Gantz left the war cabinet, leading to its dissolution by the Zionist regime prime minister. These were not the only officials to have resigned up to that point or since, yet they were certainly the most important. Leading up to the war cabinet being dissolved, Netanyahu's fascist coalition partners, like Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gavir and Finance Minister Bezalel Smotrich, were urging the Israeli PM to get rid of these opposition figures and pursue a more aggressive policy vis-à-vis the Palestinians and regional actors. Even more recently, Benjamin Netanyahu decided to sack his war minister Yoav Gallant, who was reported to have been at constant loggerheads with the Zionist regime premier on countless issues. Israel Katz was the man chosen to replace Gallant, a politician loyal to Netanyahu and who has little actual military experience that would make him a prime candidate for the job. Therefore, it has been widely reported across the Israeli domestic media that Benjamin Netanyahu had fired Gallant and replaced him with himself. What is for sure is that the Zionist regime prime minister just strengthened his own hand when it comes to decision-making on key issues, ensuring that a hawk who favors every conceivable war is in a position of power. Furthermore, the creation of this new intelligence unit would add another layer of decision-making power to Netanyahu's position. He would be briefed by a body that answers to him and would educate his own decision-making processes. It was recently revealed that Eliezer Feldstein, a top Netanyahu advisor, had been arrested in connection with a series of leaked documents from within his office. While many interpreted the arrest of Benjamin Netanyahu's aide as evidence that there had been a serious security breach, the reality was that the majority of the leaked documents were actually fabricated, indicating a deliberate series of leaks had been made. In this case, the formation of such an intelligence body would not likely be impeded by the ongoing leak incident. What could be more problematic for the Zionist regime government, however, is the potential negative outcomes of Benjamin Netanyahu having a free hand in his decision-making power and interpretation of intelligence information. Prior to October 7, the Zionist regime leadership had not anticipated that the Palestinian resistance would launch its surprise attack, despite intelligence information that was indicative of just this. Taking officials with military and intelligence experience out of decision-making positions while arming Netanyahu with even more intelligence information access could easily lead to the weakening of the Zionist regime's strategic decision-making. For instance, there may be hardline policies pursued on a number of fronts, including Iran, Iraq, Yemen, or Syria, which could lead to another security catastrophe for the Zionists. What the creation of this body could also indicate is a lack of solid information and the need to check it in order to verify certain information.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to find light in this life of darkness as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, what an honor to be here at your service, dear friends. We are talking about how to find some light in this life of darkness as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So, of course, we are all searching for a little bit of light, a little bit of hope, a little bit of mercy, a little bit of joy in this life and this world, which just seems to be filled up with darkness. And if it wasn't bad one day, it seems like the next day is worse, and the day after that is even worse. So we can all kind of agree that things seem to be very slum, things seem to be very sad and gloomy, and so we really do need some sort of light and joy and prosperity and happiness. So where should we look for that light, this kind of feeling of prosperity and happiness in our lives? Unfortunately, God forbid, some people turn to alcohol, some people turn to drugs, some people turn to music, some people even turn towards illicit relationships with the opposite gender, and thinking that this is going to bring light and prosperity and happiness to our lives, when in reality, this has a completely opposite effect. And we can see this in society, that the use of alcohol and drugs and music in certain aspects, and of course illicit relationships, they all lead towards the destruction of the individual, the destruction of the family unit, the destruction of the society, and the destruction of nations. And we see this playing out all across the world in various places where these things are done very commonly. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about where we can find a little bit of light in this world of darkness. Well, it was kind of important to talk about, you know, the false places where we turn to try to acquire light. Because, you know, unfortunately, sometimes in the chaos and the mass propaganda and misinformation, you know, that the Western world in general, and specifically the very consumeristic, capitalistic philosophies try to push, we fall into things like alcohol and drugs and sex and fashion and these kind of things, right? So we find that when it comes to the Islamic lifestyle, that when we are talking about light, we find that Imam Ali alayhi salam, he has a very beautiful statement which helps to guide us. His Eminence, he says that religion, deen, is light. He says that ad-deenun nur, that deen is light. And so what is deen? What is religion other than this Islamic lifestyle, which we are constantly talking about on A to Z? This Islamic lifestyle is religion. Religion is the Islamic lifestyle, and the Islamic lifestyle is religion. And I guarantee you that when you start to follow this Islamic lifestyle, slowly but surely, in any kind of small steps that you want to take, you will start to feel like this light is entering your life. Just give it a try. See and find out for yourself how this Islamic lifestyle can provide you with that much needed light in this dark world. IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
In today's fast-paced news cycle, it's common for breaking news to fade quickly from attention. Yet, the Zionist regime's genocidal campaign in Gaza, which has already claimed more than 44,000 Palestinian lives, has broken this trend, remaining persistently in the public eye. Regarding this issue, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Please stay tuned for more. Kayhan International wrote, "The sanguinary scenes of slaughter in Gaza over the past 400 days, without a day's respite, have shocked the world, but failed to move it into action to force the U.S. regime to end supply of weapons to the murderers in Tel Aviv, who have so far killed at least 44,000 people, 70% of whom are women and children. Once flourishing towns and cities, as well as refugee camps, the last shelter of the displaced, reduced to rubble, one of the worst catastrophes in history, is about to unfold. Yet, the self-styled advocates of human rights, along with countries that have the means to confront the genocidal Zionist entity, content themselves with mere verbal condemnation that will not stop." What is more shocking, however, is the silence of rich and seemingly powerful Muslim states sharing borders with occupied Palestine or in its vicinity and equipped with large armies and modern weapons capable of ending the genocide, if not the end of 74 years of occupation. The heads of these states have not even taken a leaf out of the Golden Book of the Axis of Resistance, which is bravely battling usurper Israel by targeting its military installations and doubtlessly offering martyrs in the process. Where is their manliness? Which school of thought do they follow? Whether their Islamic conscience? When will it be aroused? Whom are they deceiving, except themselves, with their silly excuses? Would they like to suffer the same fate as that of Gaza? Will their betrayal of the sacred cause of Al-Aqsa Mosque go unanswered? What prevents them from marching to the aid of their Arab Muslim brethren? Why are they afraid of the overinflated might of the aging U.S.? Who will save them from the wrath of God on the day of reckoning? These are among the questions demanding urgent answers from members of the 57-nation Organization of Islamic Cooperation, OIC. One of Lebanon is facing a brutal invasion. Another, Syria, is under frequent aerial and ground attacks for years, resulting in the killing of its citizens and its guests, while the UN remains a mute spectator. True, the Ansarullah-led government of Yemen plays a crucial role in bravely challenging the might of the US and the UK to block the Zionist entity's access to the Red Sea, while Iraq's Popular Mobilization Units, PMU, whose fighting prowess defeated the American-supported macabrely murderous Takfiri terrorists last decade, have successfully targeted Israel's seaports on the Mediterranean Sea. It is still not too late. All it needs is consciousness. The moment other Muslim states summon up the courage, like the Islamic Republic of Iran, to militarily confront usurper Israel, then only will the Gaza genocide end. Iran, as the sovereign, independent, and Islamic country, has already shattered the myth of the military might of the illegal Zionist entity in defense of the oppressed people of Palestine. It will continue to wreak vengeance on the criminals in Tel Aviv until the victory of the oppressed over the oppressors, whether or not the rest of the OIC members wake up to the collective threats posed to them by devilish US-Israel do.
Start. Movement. Speed. Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim. I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Iran Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of your very favorite Youth Station. Well, this is home once more. I am Asma, and I am so pleased to be here.
Well, I am so honored to be co-hosting Asma. This is Nahid, having the honor of being with you on another episode.
Well, I was reading something that was World Social Report, and it was saying that the population that is aging in all the world is going so high. The number of the people who are aging old and giving way to this change in different societies and even in the industrial aspect is so high, like the world is going toward this generations of old people. And this is very sad.
Yeah, and scary.
Yeah.
What will happen in the future, and a future that is just full of old people, and there is no, like, helpful new generation.
Yeah, unfortunately. Well, the number of people who do not tend to marry is increasing as well. And the age for fertility, we know the biological clock would not wait for anyone. It's just going. But at the same time, the girls tend not to marry in a younger age. For sure, that has got many reasons.
Yeah.
Like, it's not they're doing that out of happiness. There's a host of reasons out there. Life has become more difficult.
Yeah, I agree.
Life has become more difficult, but the number of people, the aging population does not show that. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like in past, people used to live shorter. But right now, their expectancy for having a longer life is much because, you know, maybe the health qualities of life, the qualities that are related to health and the medical conditions are changed.
So and they have improved.
People improved,
yes,
in the health conditions, but I don't think they're feeling well, psychologically speaking.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, one of the reasons can be that they cannot get along with these busy, hectic lifestyles.
For sure.
Like a person who is, yeah, though being healthy, like if I have a problem, I have lots of doctors around, I can get, like,
though many
so
of them
fast.
Cannot figure out
everything
what's the
is prepared, but still, that person still, has yeah. to strive to live.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's very interesting that, improving the quality of people's life is not actually into that direction of improving the quality of their
yeah.
life. Like, yes, maybe apparently they would be healthier, maybe they would live longer. But what about their mental health?
Still, we have mm-hmm. like rising concerns about the problems that we have and in the future we are for sure going to face.
So the world is going toward the direction where there is a huge population of aging people.
Yes.
This aging population is creating too much of a problem because with aging staff comes the boredom, comes the fact that they would be weaker. They would have this inability to be active in
yeah,
society.
Yeah, less improvements.
Yeah. But then, is it true? Is it good to point the finger on the single people? Is it just
but
the problem
do.
Of marriage?
Sadly, they do.
Is it only the problem of marriage or not? Okay, just have this question in mind. We go for a break and then we'll be back. According to Islamic notions, the youngsters must marry when the time comes. And when the time comes, the family are supposed to support them and back them up in their decisions in order for them to create a nest of family for themselves. Now, this is the true and natural way of living. This is the true course of life.
Yeah.
But then the world changed. And nowadays, marriage might not be as easy as it maybe was years ago, like centuries ago. Like when my grandmother looks at us, she feels like we are a very different species. We are, we're a phenomenon to her. We look like a real changing phenomenon to her. Because the way we define things is totally different from the way she defines them.
Yeah, and, you know, sometimes their mindsets also change.
Yeah.
Like, namely, my grandma married at age, I guess, 11 or 12.
Yeah, but they were marrying at that
yeah,
age, usually.
But the same person, when she was just, like, years ago, like, probably even 10 years ago when she was alive, and she was looking at me, and she just, like, saw some people come in asking her, she would totally reject them. And she said, no, I don't want my granddaughter to marry soon. She wants to improve. She has life ahead herself. It's like, They are also they also believe that marriage is not as simple as the time they were.
Yeah,
like,
well, it depends on their journey and experience as well.
Yeah, for sure.
But then the thing is that they do not digest this very easily. For a girl not to be married at the age of 25 or 30, this is something extraordinary to them. But then in today's world, things have changed totally in a way that right now, both. Girls and boys do not tend to marry at a young age. Now, put aside the young age, they do not tend to marry. The whole idea of marriage and responsibility and trying to be responsible towards a family, creating a family, this sounds so much for them.
Yeah, and also the on a short future, like we have the numbers of divorce on the other hand, those who are getting married, who are just struggling to start a good life, but sadly turn out to just
unfortunately
some emotional damage and then like ending the relationship.
Because actually, you know, I usually say this, but I say that as well, because, you know, unfortunately, us human beings, the modern world, the conditions of life have changed the true natural cycle of our livings. Like, it is the best decision for the youngsters to marry at a young age, but when they are mature enough to take the responsibility of a family. But what happens in reality is that they don't tend to.
Yeah.
Why? Because they think, okay, now I'm single, I could travel with my friend, I have enough of money, I am having a perfect life, why do I have to bother myself? You know, this is a question you would get from many of them. But then the thing is, if you think so, and I think so, and the entire world thinks like so, then who is responsible for the coming generation? Who is responsible for the world, for the improvement of the world?
And that is the threat to the future.
Yeah, it's a threat, and I guess it's so selfish.
It is, but it is also somehow helping, like... what if they just get married and then after a few years, like many other people, they turn out like being unable to cover all the finances, all the issues in their life.
Okay,
I mean, what
now,
if they are not
both
mature
of us,
enough?
We are youngsters and we know how the story goes. I guess we have different perspectives toward marriage. And honestly speaking, is it the matter of financial problem that we do not
marry? No, not necessarily financial. No.
It's not financial.
All perspectives of life.
All perspectives.
Yeah.
And
finances
for me,
are the simplest.
Yeah,
you know, when you look at them, the first thing that comes to your mind is this. But no, there are too many perspectives.
Too many. And one of the very much important one is the fact that people are changed.
Yeah.
And then you do not feel like it's easy to invest on someone who is not looking at the same direction as you.
Yes.
I think the psychological factors out there are playing a huge role. Because when you do not feel like you're going to gain peace in your life, then the pieces of life would be shattered. When it's shattered, the number of divorces is going to go high. So... even if you promote marriage, if it does not go with whatever God has said, if it does not go with the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, then the thing that would happen is divorce. So nobody would recommend a marriage that would lead to divorce, that would lead to divorce.
Yeah, and the other factor is that people got too busy, that sometimes we don't invest time on being mature, getting to learn the rules of life.
I'm
you know?
Telling you, see... life has changed. In my lifestyle, there is no time to be devoted for a second person.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, this would be very difficult, and we're mature enough to know that if you are going to accept a life like a marital life, then you have to have this responsibility, the responsibility of taking care of other people. Would it happen right now with the lifestyle that we have? It would be a little bit problematic. Like, and maybe we're too idealistic or thinking about perfection, maybe.
Yeah, there are thoughts about perfection, like both after marriage and before it. Like before starting a life, people start to have the dreams, dreamland of marriage.
Oh, yeah.
Marriage,
that's another
place
story.
I'm going to enter.
That's another story.
Yeah. And before that also, like, the high expectations. Like, sometimes we have people who are just, like, mature enough. They do have time. And they are well prepared for starting a new life. And it is really okay for them to start it because they do have what it
but
takes
to start. But they don't do why?
Yeah, because of the high expectations. Like, yeah. I want the person with these criteria, with those idealistic viewpoints.
I want a perfect person, though I'm not perfect.
Yes.
Yes, all of these factors are there at work. But then we have to think about the future of the world, you know? Even with these very difficult conditions, we see that there are many Muslim girls and boys who are getting married because they found actually the principles of their life,
yes,
the setting of their life. They would set it based on the Quranic verses and based on the narrations of Ahlul Bayt alayhi wasalam, and they would get the result they would wish for.
Yes.
Plus the fact that you have to have a perspective of a married life. Right now, as talking about the aging population, the thing that matters so much is the fact that the youngsters have to lend a helping hand to society. And many societies actually are giving some promotions to those people who try to get married earlier.
Yeah,
like it would be a bonus mark for people who marry and who would have children.
Yeah.
This would come as a help, and also it would have some negative points for other people who have some other perspective.
Yes.
But generally speaking, society must be thinking about this and must have some plans.
Yeah, for sure. We need to just start from the, like, even strictly speaking, I feel that from our educational system, we should start, like, both training people and preparing them for the future life, and at the same time, educating them based on the things we want from them. Like, having the mature generation prepared for marriage, at the same time, having a society that deserves and is just well prepared for people to get married.
Yeah. And then also, the people must have this positive perspective.
Yes.
When there is this huge number of people, of youngsters, who do not have any hopeful perspective toward their future, then they're not going to make perfect parents.
Well,
they're not
going to
make perfect coming generations.
Yeah.
You cannot expect them to be well prepared to handle this new generation to this world, to pass it down into the world. Nobody would wish for a society that is all old. Just imagine a society in which everywhere you go, even to the cafes, you would see old people. That would be a very depressing picture.
Yeah.
So there would always be a need for the sound of those children's, for their gigglings, for their chuckles, and for the change they would bring to the world. There would be this fresh blood that would be actually pumped up in the vessels of the world. So do not deprive the world out of this very great blessing that it would have as the coming generation.
That was all for today's episode of Youth Station. Until another time, we wish you farewell. We wish you good times. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings. Be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
It is transport. Donald Trump has bypassed normal State Department procedures in phone calls with world leaders. Apparently, the president-elect is wary of conducting phone calls with federal officials also on the line. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The American newspaper The Daily Beast has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump has reportedly spoken with world leaders like President Vladimir Putin of Russia this week without the typical oversight of the U.S. State Department and government interpreters. The reason for this, as sources explained to The Washington Post, is that Donald Trump is distrustful of federal officials after a string of leaked transcripts emerged from calls he made with world leaders during his first White House term. The Washington Post reported it's standard procedure for incoming presidents to sign an agreement with the General Services Administration, which the Trump transition team has so far bypassed. Officials familiar with conversations told the website Politico on Saturday, 9th of November, that Trump's team is expected to eventually sign an agreement with the agency, but they had not done so by the weekend's end. An insider told the Washington Post that for now, world leaders have just been calling Donald Trump directly. Trump's communications director, Stephen Chung, said in a statement that world leaders have reached out to Donald Trump to congratulate him and to develop stronger relationships with the president-elect. Stephen Chung's statement added that the incoming president represents global peace and stability, a point Trump's campaign regularly emphasized by pointing to the relative stability in the Middle East and in Ukraine during his first term in office. Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin reportedly conversed on Thursday, 7th of November, for the first time after Trump's comfortable election win. Sources told the Washington Post that Trump, speaking from Mar-a-Lago in Florida, encouraged the longtime Russian leader to not to escalate the war in Ukraine and reminded him of Washington's sizable military presence next door in Europe. A key promise of Trump's campaign was to bring an end to the war between Russia and Ukraine, but Trump stopped short of detailing how he plans to accomplish that. Among the others to ring Donald Trump this week was Ukraine's President Volodymyr Zelensky. In that 25-minute phone call, reports said Trump's billionaire super supporter Elon Musk was also on the line. Ukrainian officials told the Washington Post they did not object to Donald Trump calling President Vladimir Putin. They reportedly understood conversations would take place between the two men regarding the years-long war between Russia and Ukraine, which has left a staggering 500,000 troops killed or injured. There had been fears in Ukraine that a Trump presidency would spell the end of most U.S. military aid to the country. On his call this week, however, the website Axios reported that Ukrainian officials found Trump's words somewhat more reassuring than expected. Donald Trump's election win is yet to lead to an immediate slowdown in fighting between Russia and Ukraine. The Reuters news agency has also covered the same story. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said late on Sunday, 10th of November, that strength and diplomacy must work together to bring the war in Ukraine to an end and to ensure that such conflict does not happen again in the future. Zelensky said in his nightly video address, "We understand very clearly that diplomacy has no prospects without strength, but without a clear understanding of diplomatic goals, weapons alone will not do the job. That's why strength and diplomacy must work hand in hand. This is the only way to secure a lasting peace and to prevent wars such as the one between Moscow and Kiev from recurring," he said. Volodymyr Zelensky, who has unrelentingly called for a fair end to the war, has lobbied the United States and its NATO allies to arm Kiev and help force Russian President Vladimir Putin to peace, saying Ukraine is open only to what he called honest diplomacy. Ukraine has also been pleading with its allies to allow Kiev the use of Western long-range weapons to strike deep into Russia. Zelensky's call on Sunday for strengthening diplomatic efforts comes after former Republican president and president-elect Donald Trump defeated his pro-Ukrainian Democratic candidate Kamala Harris in U.S. presidential election. During his election campaign, Donald Trump said repeatedly that he could end the war in Ukraine in a day, but he never said how. On Thursday, 7th of November, Trump spoke with President Vladimir Putin and advised him not to escalate the war. A knowledgeable source confirmed to Reuters news agency that the phone call between Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin, Kiev had not been informed in advance about the phone call. The United States has been by far the biggest contributor of aid and weapons to Ukraine, though Donald Trump's victory in the presidential election has raised questions about future policy. Meanwhile, President Joe Biden plans to urge Donald Trump not to abandon Kiev. Donald Trump spoke with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky on Wednesday, 6th of November. Trump has criticized the scale of U.S. military aid and financial support for Kiev. Ukraine's foreign ministry said it was not informed in advance of the phone call between Donald Trump and President Vladimir Putin and subsequently could neither endorse nor object to the phone call. Trump's communications director Stephen Chung said, "We do not comment on private calls between President Trump and other world leaders." Republican Trump will take office on 20th of January after defeating Vice President Kamala Harris in the 5th of November presidential election. President Biden has invited Donald Trump to come to the Oval Office on Wednesday. U.S. National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan said on Sunday, 10th of November, that Joe Biden's top message will be his commitment to ensure a peaceful transfer of power, and he will also talk to Donald Trump about what's happening in Europe, in Asia, and in the Middle East. Jake Sullivan told CBS News' Face the Nation program, "President Biden will have the opportunity over the next 70 days to make the case to Congress and to the incoming Trump administration that the United States should not walk away from Ukraine, that walking away from Ukraine means more instability in Europe." Jake Sullivan's comments come as Ukraine attacked Moscow on Sunday with at least 34 drones, the biggest drone strike on Russia's capital since the beginning of the war. Washington has provided tens of billions of dollars worth of U.S. military aid and economic aid to Ukraine since the war started in February of 2022. The funding for the war has been criticized repeatedly by Donald Trump. Trump insisted last year that the Russia-Ukraine war would never have started if he had been in the White House at the time. He told Reuters news agency, "Ukraine may have to cede territory to reach a peace agreement with Russia, something that the Ukrainians have totally rejected, and President Biden has never suggested." Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky said on Thursday, 7th of November, he was not aware of the details of Donald Trump's plan to end the Ukraine war quickly, and that he was convinced a rapid end to the war would entail major concessions for Kiev.
IRIB English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to IRIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of this speech delivered by Imam Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, in a meeting with a thousand of veterans and active members in the sacred defense and the resistance field. The meeting took place in the Imam Khomeini Hosseiniya on September 25th, 2024. In the early days of the war, we had just arrived in Ahvaz when an officer approached me. He was a lieutenant colonel or a major, I don't remember exactly. He said he had a request. At first, I thought he wanted to ask for a leave of absence due to some problem back in his hometown for which he had not been given permission. That was my first impression. But then he said that his request was to be allowed to join the group that, as he put it, hunted for tanks at night with Martir Chamran. We are talking about a man in his 40s or 50s begging to be allowed to go out at night with the young people who accompanied Chamran, armed with RPGs to attack battle tanks, for example. Now, put this example next to a teenager who alters his age on his birth certificate so that he can go to the front lines or he cries and begs his parents to allow him to go to the front. We had these things.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Humble prayers, crying in the middle of the night, selfless acts of service, or a commander who wakes up in the middle of the night to polish the boots of his soldiers and wash their clothes. These things don't exist in any other army or battlefield in the world. These acts are unique to the Islamic Republic. In the last moments of life, some would refuse to drink water to ensure that their thirsty comrades wouldn't pass away in a state of thirst. A soldier's water would be passed on to his friend and he would die in a state of thirst himself. These things that we have read in history, we either witnessed them firsthand ourselves during the war or heard about them from those who had witnessed them. Under enemy bombardment, a young man who was later martyred would write his final will in which he emphasized the importance of observing the hijab. This shows the extent of their spirituality, religious commitment, and commitment to the Islamic laws and faith. In my opinion, this account of the war and such a look at a war is more important than the descriptive report.
Allah, I want to thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Olemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Yet another Sunday in Sydney, and once again, crowds fill the streets in a powerful display of solidarity with the people of Palestine and Lebanon. Chants echo through the hearts of the city as demonstrators march, their voices united in support for Palestinian rights. At the gathering, a Palestinian speaker took a moment to thank the Australian people for their relentless support, urging them to keep pushing the movement for justice forward.
Prepare to fight. The Zionist terrorists can't occupy the mind of people, the heart of a people that have dignity and honor and are willing to die for it.
Among the demonstrators are Michael Payne and his sister, a dedicated pair who have been unwavering in their advocacy. As staunch supporters of humanitarian rights, the siblings have rarely missed a Sunday without standing up for the Palestinian cause. The crimes must stop, they say, calling on others to join their fight for a just and humane world.
They're claiming that the criminal has a right to defend itself. Well, that's not correct. The criminal has a right to a defence lawyer. They might have a right to a fair trial or something like that, but they don't have the right to defend themselves against the people they're targeting with their horrendous, heinous crimes. So to me, that's part of the spokespeople from the Western governments that claim this.
It seems very bizarre. We have all these international humanitarian laws, international laws about a nation being able to defend themselves from invasion, and yet what Israel has done is completely invade. They have kept the whole of Gaza a prisoner. 2.3 million people are prisoner.
Protesters from all walks of life have come together, highlighting the universal call for justice. University students in Sydney have been a notable presence, voicing their commitment to human rights and standing in unity with the Palestinian people. For them, this isn't just a moment. It's a movement that demands global attention.
I think the narrative has definitely changed. I mean, Israel has been enacting a kind of slow, creeping genocide for decades and decades. Now it's like accelerated 100 times with what's happening in Gaza. I think definitely it's a genocide, it's ethnic cleansing.
Despite mounting pressure and opposition, pro-Palestine groups in Australia continue to make their voices heard, fighting for their fundamental right to protest. Amid government criticism, these activists hold firm, asserting that the call for freedom and justice cannot be silenced. They emphasize that nations like Australia cannot remain silent. They must take action and hold Israel accountable, rejecting any stance of complicity in the face of injustice.
For people here, this protest isn't just an event. It has turned into a movement for justice, a stand to secure a future rooted in what's right. Shahana Bhatt, Sydney.
In a heartfelt show of solidarity, Pakistanis have gathered in Islamabad to mark 40 days since the assassination of Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah, the influential Hezbollah leader who was killed by Israeli forces in Lebanon last month. The memorial ceremony drew people from all walks of life, united in honoring Sayyid Hassan Nasrullah's legacy of resistance and condemning the actions of the US and Israel in Gaza.
The silence of those who seek to appease their Western masters, including the U.S. and U.K., has been glaringly exposed during Israel's unrelenting genocide in Gaza. The world will never forget the oppression inflicted by Israel and the United States on the Palestinians, and sooner or later, both will be brought to justice.
The event, held at the heart of the city, served as a reminder of Hassan Nasrullah's influence that transcended borders, resonating deeply with people far beyond Lebanon.
Shahid Hassan Nasrullah.
Nasrullah's life was defined by his commitment to resistance and his people. He was more than just a leader. He was a symbol of defiance against oppression and a beacon for those striving for dignity and justice.
Participants also spoke about the ongoing humanity